Paramahansa Paravatacharya Osutada Sutasi Shibhad. His Divine Grace of Ayachadana Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shidahuridas Thakur Ki Jai Vrense Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasiri Gaur Bhakta Vrindakichaya Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopatasayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Nidam Kijai Jagannathasami Kijai Yamadamai Kijai Shimati Talasi Devi Kijai Sambhita Bhakta Vrindakichaya Gaur Prindananda All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Om Ganat Midandasha Gananjana Shlakya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So as I mentioned, we're going to be giving a summary of the Bhagavad Gita, and if you hear the summary, you'll pretty much understand the main topics of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, some of the secondary topics I'm not going to be speaking about. So I think to keep this more lively, I'm going to be asking questions during this. For those of you who have read the Gita before, we're supposed to have Bhakti Shastri or something. So basically, I'm not going to give the history of the Bhagavad Gita because I talked about the Mahabharata on Sunday, and I'm not going to talk so much about the personalities in terms of those who are fighting on both sides of the Battle of Kurukshetra, what the Battle of Kurukshetra was, but I'm going to talk about the Gita and the knowledge portrayed in the Gita. And of course, generally, we have three divisions of knowledge that are in the Gita, that's Sambandha, Abhidaya, and Prayojana. Sambandha means basically to understand the relationship between the Lord's energies, time, karma, the living entity, etc., the material energy. So that's Sambandha, and then Abhideya means what do you do about it? How do you come to a higher platform? In other words, go back to Godhead, what's the goal? And then Prayojana means the actual goal, the spiritual world. And there's a little bit of information about Prayojana, the spiritual world in the Gita, such as Natadva Siyate Suryo Na Shashanko Napavaka. Yadgatwa Nadivartante Tandama Paramamama. And for those of you who don't know Sanskrit, Krishna describes his abode as not being illuminated by sun, moon, or even electricity. See, he knew about electricity. And when it goes there, it doesn't come back again. So the Gita is generally broken down into three different sections. Does anyone know what those three sections are? No, three in terms of the chapters.
The first six are like the philosophical introduction.
Yeah. And the second six are considered to be what? Bhakti, the nectar, the cream. It's like an Oreo sandwich. And the last six are, you know, they have some devotional service. Let me describe. The first six, these are my notes, contain knowledge of the body and soul and the position of the soul, of course, and Krishna's position. Second six is Krishna, that's God, in case you haven't figured that out yet, and the relationship of the soul and devotional service. So that's why it's considered the nectar, the middle six chapters. And the last six chapters are several different topics. How the living entity comes in contact with matter and is delivered by Lord Krishna through fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and ultimately devotional service. And of course you have the modes of nature in there and other things too. But those are the main topics in the breakout of the first six, middle six, and the last six chapters of the Gita, 18 chapters of the Gita. Of course, the first chapter, that's the easiest for us. It's, setting the scene or observing the armies in the battlefield occur, etc. And basically what we have in the first chapter is Sanjaya, who is the secretary of Dhritarashtra, who Dhritarashtra, of course, is blind. Sanjaya got the benediction from Shiva Vyasadeva that he could observe what was going on in the battle of Kurukshetra. It's interesting, in the Mahabharata it describes that Shiva Vyasadeva offered Dhritarashtra the vision first. And Dhritarashtra said, no, I don't want to see, for the first time in my life, seeing my sons being killed. So he rejected that, and so Sanjaya, who was like the secretary of Dhritarashtra, was relating what was happening. And Dhritarashtra was asking the questions, you know, what did my sons and the sons do, etc. And there's a description of the fighters on both sides, conch shells blowing. You don't have to remember the names of the conch shells. It's not that important. And then finally, Arjuna pulls his chariot, or asks Krishna, he doesn't pull it, but he asks Krishna to pull the chariot into the middle of the battle, just to see both sides, and basically he's getting a little overwhelmed at this point, and completely overwhelmed when he pulls in the middle of the battle field. And he starts trembling. His Gandiva bow, which he's very proud of, which is given to him by Agni, slips from his hands. He starts lamenting, and he says, Govinda, I'm not going to fight. And the reasons he gives for that are five. Good devotees take notes on this, but anyway. I can actually give devotees copies of this later on. I spent a lot of time doing this summary. I have a more extensive summary, too, that would take a few weeks to recite. So the reasons are, one is, it's sinful. A sinful will overcome us if we actually engage in this battle. So he's afraid of that. And the second one is he gives the excuse of family traditions being vanquished, because he's very, very much concerned with the stability of society. And not only that, because the family traditions are vanquished or will be vanquished, and so many of the men will be killed, then the next excuse comes out, which is the women will not be protected. And as a result of that, there's going to be avarna sampara. which means unwanted children. Society will be hellish. There'll be no oblations offered to the forefathers, no welfare for the family, no community projects. And the people who engage in destroying these particular activities, these beneficial activities, always dwell in hell. So in other words, he's worried about going to hell, too, because he's going to be the one who's responsible, according to his idea, for the destruction of all these different beneficial activities. And then the next excuse he gives, he says, actually, the only reason we're fighting is we want to enjoy. And so this is not a good motivation. And then finally he says, well, it's better to be killed than to kill. And he's also afraid of killing, or doesn't want to kill his family members. Then he sits down his bow and arrows and basically falls into a depression. And so that's the end of the first chapter. And I said some of the details are being left out. The second chapter is entitled The Contents of the Gita Summarized. And in the beginning of the chapter, Krishna sort of chastises Arjuna. You know, like speaking learned words, you are, you know, actually like a fool. And he begins to instruct him on the dharma of a kshatriya. And then after instructing him on the dharma of the kshatriya, he says, now what are you worried about anyway? Death is certain for everybody. And then he begins to describe the position of the soul in terms of the soul's eternality. He talks about reincarnation, how the soul is never killed or born, ajayate mriyate va kadachan, nayam bhutva bhavita va anabhuyaham. And he even talks about hints that bhakti yoga is being eternal. And he says the bhakti yogi is a very determined person. He said, the excuses you're giving are mainly based upon certain Vedic injunctions. And then there's a famous verse he quotes. Krishna doesn't quote, but Krishna speaks. And he says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nis Trigunya Vivarjana Nirdvandvo Nityusakaso Niryogik Shemaatmavan. That the Vedas that you're quoting, or these different excuses you're giving, they're mainly meant for those in the three modes of material nature. And you should rise above these things, Arjuna, and be transcendental. In other words, don't be absorbed in these material affairs anymore. You should be a yogi. And what is a yogi? He begins to describe, and not in such detail, but he says that a yogi is one who is unattached to the fruits of his activities. And by doing that, by doing his activities in yoga, he gets rid of karma, he takes shelter of God, and he becomes detached from this material world, and he experiences a higher taste. And he does this by controlling his senses. That means, if you want to control your senses, don't contemplate sense objects. Famous verses in the second chapter, such as Jayato Vishaya Sangha, Sangosteshu Pajayate, Sangat Sanjayate, Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate. From contemplating the objects of senses, one gets attached. One gets lusty, one gets angry. And so he gives this whole chain of events that occurs to warn Arjuna about getting attached to material things. You should ignore your desires, Krishna says to Arjuna. And basically, he talks about these desires, giving a very interesting analogy, actually metaphor. Very interesting metaphor. He says that just like so many rivers enter into the ocean, and the ocean is still, in the same way, so there may be so many desires or coming to the mind, but the yogi or the transcendentalist remains still. And this is sort of the summary of the second chapter of the Gita. There's a lot more information than that. Third chapter is entitled, who knows the name of the third chapter?
Karma Yoga.
And this is a little more lengthy as far as the summary is concerned. Arjuna, at the beginning of the third chapter, he says, I'm bewildered. Because you're speaking about being intelligent, intelligence and then giving up fruitive work, and you're asking me to fight. So what's happening here? So in other words, he confuses devotional service with fruitive work. That's his main confusion at the beginning of the third chapter. Then Krishna begins to explain to him that some of the aspects of devotional service, such as that he will not become free from this world, freedom doesn't come from just sitting still and doing nothing. You should understand that devotional service, which he describes here as work for Vishnu, does not bind one. It actually pleases the demigods, and Brahman, transcendental nature, manifests in work for Brahman. Famous verse, of course, there. Brahmarpan, Brahmana, what's it? Brahmatena gantavyam, Brahmakarma samadhanam. The transcendentalist should still do his duties. And the reason, another reason the transcendentalist should do his duties is to set an example for others. Krishna gives this famous, another famous verse, yad yad charati shreshtas tatat evet rojanha. What does that verse mean? As great personalities act, everybody follows, all people in society follow. That's why it's very important in Krishna consciousness to have role models, or what we call exemplars. So, set an example, and he gives the example of a particular great personality who acted in that way. Who was that great personality? What? Janaka Maharaj, who was the father of Sita Devi. And he said, but in preaching, don't disturb the mind of the ignorant. In other words, set an example, because if you don't set a good example, it will disturb the mind of the ignorant. And also when you preach, don't disturb the mind of the ignorant person. Do your duty according to your nature. Here he starts to bring in the aspect of varnashram, to act according to your nature. And then he says sin actually comes, he starts to define sin. Sin comes from lust, which is born of the modes of passion and resides in three different places. What are the three different places?
Mind, intelligence.
And where else? And what?
Senses.
Senses, mind, and intelligence. So you should realize that this is actually quite an important instruction. This lust resides in the senses, the mind, and the intelligence, the three places. And so then Krishna says that you have a higher self. And he doesn't really define what that higher self is at this particular point, other than having talked about the soul before. He says you should use this higher self to conquer the lower self. And this higher self, of course, is intelligence. Because, as Prabhupada describes, the intelligence, and Prabhupada used the expression, he held his hand up his right hand. He says, intelligence is this close to the soul. Of course, spiritual intelligence. And the example given elsewhere is, actually this example is from the Upanishads, is that the body is like a chariot, and the soul is riding in that chariot. And the driver of the chariot is what?
Intelligence.
And the mind is what? What? The reins. And the senses are what?
The horses.
So you got five senses, actually six senses, Manakshastani, Indriyani, Prakatishtani, Karshati. Six senses which include the mind. So the intelligence is the driver, so the driver has to really control those reins, so the horses, which means controlling the mind, the horses, the senses just don't run around everywhere. You know, one time I had the experience, I jumped on a horse, and it was a pretty wild horse, and I was trying to control it with the reins, but hey, guess what? The horse took me into the next county, and I had to finally jump off the horse to get to escape. At least the horse didn't throw me off. So, anyway, so that's... let's see, where... Yeah, that's the third chapter. You conquer the lower self with the higher self, and that's the end of the third chapter. Now, the chapters get bigger as we go along. Some of them get bigger. Fourth chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge, in which Krishna starts to deal with a particular subject matter called epistemology. Epistemology means, how do you know that you know? Or how do you know what you know? In other words, it's the science of knowledge. So, of course, Prabhupada talks about this in some depth in the Isopanishad in terms of the different methods of receiving knowledge. You know, there's the inductive process. Inductive process means that you observe certain examples of different people or activities in this world, and then you draw a general conclusion. The example Prabhupada gives is that you see, everyone you see has died. So therefore you come to the general conclusion that all men are mortal. At least the bodies of all men are mortal. And that type of methodology of coming to a conclusion is faulty. For example, well, the reason is because you cannot observe every man or every woman. You'd have to observe 100% of the cases, and you can't because you're not God. So there may be some man somewhere who is immortal. So that method is extremely faulty. I mean, just like people come to us sometimes and say, no one has seen God. And that's an interesting statement, because for them to make that statement, it's an absolute statement, they would have to know everybody. No one has seen God. That's they're using an induction to come to that particular conclusion, because no one who they ever met has seen God. However, perhaps someone has seen God. We know someone has, many people have seen God. So that's the problem with induction. And then Prabhupada really talks about the descending process, which Krishna talks about here in the fourth chapter of the Gita, Shabda Pramanam. That means taking evidence from transcendental sound. So Krishna really stresses that here. He talks about disciplic succession. Imam Vivasvate Yogam Prabhupada Naham Abhyam. What does that verse say? Does anyone know? In the beginning, I instructed this science to who?
To
Sangha Vivaswan. Vivaswan instructed it to Manu. Manu instructed it to. Yes, and this was passed down in the chain of disciplic succession. So this is really an important topic, epistemology. And then once Krishna established this as epistemology, he starts to describe his own activities in body. And he, of course, famous verse. Janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha chaktvudhanam puna janma naiti mam eti sojana. What's the translation of that verse? Very nice. So first Krishna understands, how do you know, and how do you know what you know? And then he actually starts to give us transcendental information. And then he even says the goal is to love him. He describes some of his qualities here, such as being neutral. He says he simply reciprocates, you know, yayatamam prapajante tam sataiva pajamiham mama vartmanu vartante manushaparta sarvasha. What does that verse say? He has to reciprocate with me. Actually, surrender is the way Prabhupada translates it, but it's I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. And sometimes the impersonalists, they take that verse out of context and they say, everybody is following the same path. And what's the answer to that? The Christian says everyone follows his path in all respects. So how do we counteract that particular statement?
Finding out what path they're following is Christian's path.
It is Christian's path.
According to the...
What's that? Yeah, but there's another quick answer. We don't have time for the microphone while we're doing this.
Then
another quick answer is that everyone follows Krishna's path, but some people go in the opposite direction on the path. It's like people going to Interstate 40. This is a quick answer you can give when you're preaching to people. Because sometimes you get these impersonals. Krishna says, you know, everyone follows my path. And you say, yes. Everybody can go on, you know, of course, if you're in India, there's no Interstate 40. There's the motorway, you know, the Jamuna Expressway. Some people are going to Delhi and some people are going to Vrindavan. Yeah. Yeah. See if you're following the path Krishna recommends. But
yeah, we can say all trains don't go to the same destination.
Yeah, everybody's taking a train. Everyone's going on the Indian railway system. But someone's going. And anyway. There's many ways you can explain that. Everyone is basically following or serving Krishna. That's another way to explain it. Like that means that everyone is serving Krishna voluntarily as free persons, utilizing their free will, or people are following Krishna or serving Krishna involuntarily, being controlled by the modes of material nature. So that's another way to explain that. So we're continuing with chapter 4. Boy, it's not going too fast. The reason, and then Krishna describes in the fourth chapter the reason he comes down. And what is the reason he comes down in the fourth chapter of the Gita? Does anyone know? What's that? Good.
For the sake of devotees.
Yeah, whenever there is decline in religious practice or upsurge in irreligion, I come. And then Pritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chadushkudam. I come to establish religious principles, protect the devotees, and get rid of the rascals.
But mostly to enjoy.
I know, but that's not part of this chapter. We understand that. But this is the fourth chapter. So he comes for these reasons. And the goal of Krishna consciousness, one of the goals, the secondary goal, is to become free from attachment, fear, and anger, and the primary goal is to love Krishna. So Krishna presents that very clearly there. And then he criticizes demigod worship in this chapter. He says, kamaistashta kavikta jnana prapajantena devata. Avidipurvakam is the word he uses. Avidipurvakam, he says, the demigod worship is not recommended. You get quick results. That's true. But those who are full of lust surrender to the demigods. Then he gets into describing what we call karma, akarma, and vikarma. Karma means basically pious activities. Akarma means spiritual activities without a result. And vikarma means impious activities that have a result that causes the living entity to get punished. So these three. And then he describes that working for Krishna is without karma. Working for him is without karma. So he keeps assuring, referring back to Arjuna's objections in the beginning. The first objection was the sin will overcome us. In other words, bad karma will overcome us. So he's referring back to this, that if you work for me, there's no sin. This is chapter 4. Working for Krishna is transcendental. And then sacrifice is necessary. And in the end, he starts talking about sacrifice is necessary. In other words, that's further elaborated on in the 18th chapter where Krishna says, you know, sarva-dharmam pricchaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami masujaha. That if you surrender to me and do what I want, then I'll protect you from all the sin. So this is a topic that's mentioned in several places in the Gita. Finally, in the end of the fourth chapter, Krishna talks about how sacrifice is necessary But sacrifice of knowledge is best, and this occurs by approaching a spiritual master. And then in the fifth chapter, getting to the fifth chapter, called Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, Arjuna is still confused because Krishna previously in the fourth chapter described that the sacrifice of knowledge is best. And Arjuna still asks the question whether renouncing work or work in devotion is better. He still hasn't gotten the whole point. So Krishna explains very thoroughly how work in devotion is actual renunciation. And without devotion, renunciation cannot make you happy. He describes how a devotee works in a very detached way and is not affected by sin. This is another point, too, addressing Arjuna's initial objection, why he didn't want to fight. And he said, in this way, a devotee becomes happy and eventually sees everyone equally. And then at the end of the fifth chapter, he gives the famous peace formula. Does anyone know that peace formula? Maheshram Suradam Sarvabhutanam Getwamam Shanti Mrichati. That one who understands I'm the enjoyer, Sarvaloka Maheshram, the Lord of all the worlds, Suradam Sarvabhutanam, the intimate friend of all living entities, Getwamam Shanti, he comes to the point of being peaceful. So he's assuring Arjuna that if you follow this path and you devote yourself to him, then Arjuna will be peaceful. And obviously, at this point, Arjuna is still not peaceful. Sixth chapter, moving ahead. See, we're learning a lot this morning. It's called Sankhya Yoga. And what's that? Well, actually, in my Gita, it says Sankhya Yoga.
It's in 72 editions written Sankhya Yoga, and the new editions written Dhyana Yoga.
Yeah, in the old edition it says Sankhya Yoga.
What's the reason? Because the original was Sankhya Yoga is second chapter.
Anyway, my Bhagavad Gita was written Sankhya Yoga. That's the one Prabhupada came out with. So Sankhya, the word Sankhya basically means to count or analysis, but actually it's more like Hatha Yoga being described here. But anyway, this is what my Gita says. Krishna reiterates, in other words, speaks again how the mystic is an unattached person. Again, he's addressing Arjuna's objection or Arjuna's confusion about whether a devotee doesn't act or acts. But he says a mystic or a devotee is an unattached person, not an inactive person. A yogi must renounce sense gratification. His mind must be controlled. And then Krishna talks in many verses about the Hatha Yoga process, you know, going to a secluded place, sitting down, etc., etc., which culminates in bhakti. Arjuna says, I can't do it. I can't control the mind. And he speaks this famous verse, Chanchalahi Manaha Krishna Pramati Balabhadradam. Tashaham nigraham manye vayor iva shirushkaram. Does anyone know what that?
The mind is restless, turbulent.
Obstinate. Very strong.
And the control is more difficult.
Than controlling the wind. And then Arjuna expresses his concern. Look, you're trying to engage me in this devotional service, but what if someone fails halfway through? You know, is everything lost? And then Krishna describes Swapam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Upaya. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. And Krishna gives an explanation of what happens to the unsuccessful yogi. In other words, just to summarize that, if a yogi is not successful in achieving his Krishna consciousness and he's very spiritually advanced, then he takes birth in a family of transcendentalists. And if he's not so spiritually advanced, then he takes birth in the heavenly planets and then he comes down to the earth planet and takes birth in a rich family in America. I added that to see if you were actually listening.
It's a little
What's that?
It's in my book.
What's in your book?
Rich Family in America.
Yeah.
It says in America? No. No, it says wealthy family. Probably says wealthy family. 72 of this. And then, of course, so he assures Arjuna that, look, if you take up this path, of course, Arjuna is already a pure devotee. That's understood. Then you don't have to worry about failing halfway through. He's still, you know, very, very concerned about himself at this point. And the last verse in this sixth chapter is quite an important verse. Does anyone know that verse? Madgatin. Mataha. Very good. That of all yogis, yoginam api sarvesham. Sarvesham means all. Madgatin antaratmana. Those who take me as the goal. Shradhat with faith, full of faith, not only with faith, but shradhanam bhajate. Full of faith, they worship bhajate yomam. They worship me. Same yuktatama mataha. So you have the superlative there in Sanskrit. Superlative means they are the best. You know, there's the comparative, better. There's best, better, and the best. So they are the best according to Krishna, those who are the bhakti yogis, those who worship me with full faith. And that's the sixth chapter. Moving ahead to the seventh chapter. What's the name of the seventh chapter?
No.
The knowledge of the
absolute.
Knowledge of the absolute. Okay. And in this chapter, Krishna talks about, again, he mentions, only by yoga can you know him. And it's very rare to actually know Krishna. What verse is that? Manushanam.
Manushanam sastra.
Yatati siddhaye.
Yatatama pisiranam.
Out of many what? Such as, yeah. Manushanam sahasreshu, thousand men. Kashchan mam veti tatvata Kashchan mam veti tatvata. So one may know me and, one may, looking for perfection out of those who are at perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So it's very rare. Of course, we are assured by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, and by Srila Prabhupada, by following this process of Krishna consciousness, we can know Krishna in this very lifetime, even though it's very rare. That was also a previous yuga. Then Krishna describes again what the living entity is not one of the eightfold material elements. He's transcendental to the eightfold material elements. The identity of Krishna is described. Krishna is the strength of the strong, the intelligence of the intelligent, and the mobile phone of the mobile phones. He's the source of the three modes of nature, and he's not under the modes. He tells Arjuna, if you surrender to him, you'll be free from the modes. Then he describes four types of people who surrender to him and four types who don't. Who are the four types who surrender to him? Anyone know? What's that?
Desire and wealth.
Wealth, distress, what else? Curious. Searching for knowledge. These are four types. And then he describes four types of people who don't approach him. What are they? Namam diskutina muda prapajante naradama maya pratijjana asurabhavama shruta. What are they?
Muda.
The
naradamas.
Yeah.
Maya pratijjana and asurabhavama shruta.
Okay, those are... The mudhas are just like... Mudhas. I mean, how do you describe it? They're just like fools. They just like go to the football game in Chapel Hill, get drunk, right? And of course, luckily they hear the Harinam there at the same time, right?
That's what
happens. Say the mudhas. Those are mudhas. I mean, they're just so foolish. They're just like living for the moment for sense gratification. Mam Duskrutinam Prohatintena Radama, the lowest of mankind. Which is interesting, Prabhupada described that there's 400, and not just Prabhupada, there's 400,000 species of human life, right? And some of those are not so acclimated or useful so far as spiritual life. In other words, one gets a body that's just not able to do it. Narottama, and then Maya Pratyajnana, ones whose intelligence is stolen by illusion. That means one who is just like, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, too much education makes one as foolish as an ass. Yeah, not all the modern scientists, but one who just like takes scientism. Scientism means that, you know, life comes from matter. That's because, there are many Krishna conscious scientists like our Sariputta. And then Asuram Bhava Masrita, those who are just like demoniac, asuras. Atheistic demons, just completely atheistic against the existence of God. So, and then, what's that?
One note is that the Prabhupada lectured on 7.1 by Gita more than any verse, so this is a very important chapter.
Wow. That is nice. So, and then there's another important verse that Bahunam Janmanamante Ganavam Mam Prabhajate Vasudevam Sarvamiti Samahabhasa Durlabha. That after many, many births, one surrenders into Krishna, such a soul is rare. So also we have that emphasis that it's very rare to surrender to Krishna. And then towards the end of the chapter, Krishna says, again he mentions the demigods. He says, surrender to the demigods is not recommended by me, but if you do, I will give you faith in the demigods. In other words, faith in whoever you surrender to. I think that's all we have time for today. We've only gotten up to the seventh chapter. Should we continue tomorrow with this?
Yes.
Okay. Chapter 8, tomorrow. All glorious news of divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.